Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to basically take interesting source material and break it down, give you the key insights fast.
Make you sound smart at parties, right?
Exactly. So today, we're diving into something pretty ancient, quite symbolic. It's from a YouTube transcript channel called End Time Pilgrim, looking at Daniel's vision.
Ah, yes. The one with the ram, the goat, and the little horn. Very famous passage.
That's the one. Our mission really is to unpack what's going on in this vision,
yeah,
the story it tells, and you know what meaning the source, End Time Pilgrim, draws from it.
Sounds good. It's a powerful sequence.
Okay, so let's get into it. It's not just a story, is it? It's this series of animal allegories, really potent symbols.
Definitely. And the setting itself is quite specific. Daniel gets this vision, third year of King Belshazzar's reign.
Right, and he's in Susa.
Yeah.
By the Ulai Canal.
Exactly. In the citadel of Susa, by the canal, you can almost picture him, you know, by the water, and then boom, this vision unfolds.
So who's the first character, the first symbol that appears?
Right. So first up, we have this ram, a pretty formidable one.
Formidable how? What does it do?
Well, the text immediately emphasizes its power. It has two horns. They're long, but one grows longer later on.
Interesting detail.
And it's charging west, north, south, just pushing out everywhere.
Like unchecked power.
Precisely. The text says no animal could stand against it. Nobody could rescue anything from its power. It just did as it pleased and became great.
Wow. Okay. So setting the stage, unchallenged dominance.
Yeah, that's the feeling. A major power.
But these visions rarely stay static, do they? A new player arrives.
Oh, yeah. Things change dramatically. Suddenly, you've got this goat appearing from the west.
A goat. Just a regular goat.
Well, not quite. It has a massive horn, a prominent one, right between its eyes. And its speed is unreal.
How so?
It's described as crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. Like it's flying almost.
Okay, that's quite an entrance. And it heads for the ram.
Directly. It charges the ram in, the text says, great rage, a furious attack.
And the outcome.
Total devastation for the ram. The goat shatters its two horns, knocks it down, tramples it. The ram is left, quote, powerless.
So a swift, violent overthrow.
Absolutely pivotal moment. The powerful ram is just gone.
And the goat, the victor, becomes very great. But power shifts again, doesn't it? What about that big horn?
Right, exactly. Just when the goat is at its absolute peak, its strongest point, that large horn is broken off. Snap.
Rocking. Just like that.
Just like that. And in its place, four other horns grow up. Prominent ones.
Four horns. Where are they pointing?
Towards the four winds of heaven. So north, south, east, west, symbolically speaking. It signifies a breakup, right? A fracturing of that single great power.
Into four lesser powers, maybe?
Sort of, yeah. The interpretation later confirms that. But then from one of those four.
Uh-oh. Here comes another one.
Yep. Another horn emerges. This one starts small. A little horn.
But I have a feeling it doesn't stay little for long.
You'd be right. It grows incredibly powerful, extends its reach southeast and towards the beautiful land, which is often understood as, you know, Israel or Judea.
So it's expanding geographically, but does it stop there?
Not at all. This is where it gets, frankly, a bit cosmic. It grows so much, it reached the host of the heavens.
The host of heavens, like angels or stars.
The text mentions throwing some of the starry host down to earth and trampling them. It's like, this horn has ambitions beyond just earthly dominion.
That's intense.
Ah.
And its actions sound pretty aggressive, especially towards, well, divine things.
Extremely aggressive. It sets itself up to be as great as the commander of the army of the Lord. That's a direct challenge.
A challenge how? What does it do practically?
It takes away the daily sacrifice from the Lord, that regular offering. And the sanctuary itself is thrown down.
Why?
The text links it to rebellion. It says the Lord's people and the sacrifice are given over to it. It seems like a time of, well, terrible desecration.
And it succeeds in this.
Apparently, yes. It prospered in everything it did. And crucially, truth was thrown to the ground. It's a dark period described here.
So this lasts indefinitely, or is there a time frame mentioned?
There is. The vision shifts slightly, and one holy one asks another, basically, how long? How long will this desolation, this trampling of the sanctuary and the host last?
And the answer?
The answer given is very specific. Unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed.
2,300 days. That's, well, it's precise. The what days mean in prophecy can be debated.
Oh, absolutely. Some interpretations see them as literal days, others as years, a day-year principle. But the number itself, 2,300, is what's stated in the text here.
Okay, so Daniel sees all this unfold. Ram, goat, horns, little horn. The 2,300 days, he must be reeling.
Completely. He's trying to understand it all. He's still there by the Ulai Canal.
And then help arrives.
Yes, a figure appears, identified as Gabriel. The angel Gabriel.
The Gabriel. Okay. Yeah. And he's there to explain.
Exactly. He tells Daniel the vision relates to the time of the end. Then he starts decoding the symbols.
All right, let's hear it. What's the official meaning, according to Gabriel?
The ram with the two horns. That represents the kings or kingdoms of Media and Persia.
Okay, makes sense. The dual power.
Then the rough goat, the fast one. That's the king or kingdom of Grecia, Greece.
Alexander the Great's empire, presumably.
That's the connection most draw, yes. The great horn between his eyes is explicitly called the first king of Grecia.
Alexander. And when that horn broke?
The four horns that replaced it. They represent four kingdoms that will emerge from Alexander's empire after his death.
The Diadochi kingdoms, maybe? Like the Seleucids, Ptolemies?
That's the historical alignment, yes. But Gabriel adds a key detail. They will rise, but not in his power. They won't have the same singular might as the first king.
Got it. Fragmented power. Now, the big question. That little horn. The one that grew so big and caused so much trouble. Who is that revealed to be?
Okay, so Gabriel describes this figure as a king of fierce countenance.
Fierce countenance. Yeah. Sounds intimidating.
Yes, ruthless, perhaps.
Mm.
And it also says he's understanding dark sentences, which sounds ominous, cunning, maybe, deceptive.
Intriguing. And when does this king rise?
In the latter time of their kingdom, meaning the Greek successor kingdoms, when the transgressors are come to the full. So a time of peak wickedness, perhaps.
And his power. Is it his own?
Gabriel makes a point of saying his power is mighty, but not by his own power.
Hmm. What could that mean? Outside help? Supernatural backing?
It's debated, but it suggests his strength isn't purely self-generated. There's something else behind it, an important distinction.
And what specific actions does Gabriel attribute to this king? It sounded destructive earlier.
It is. He shall destroy wonderfully, which is a strange phrase, but implies, you know, astonishing levels of destruction.
Wonderfully destructive. Okay.
He shall prosper in practice, meaning he'll be successful in his schemes, and he targets specific groups. He will destroy the mighty and the holy people.
So powerful figures and also God's people.
Yes. And here's a really interesting part. Through his policy also, he shall cause craft or deceit to prosper in his hand.
Policy and craft.
Mm-hmm.
So political manipulation. Deception.
Seems like it. And linked to that, by peace shall destroy many. That's chilling. Not just war, but using false peace, perhaps treaties or assurances, to bring ruin.
Wow. That adds a layer of insidious strategy.
Definitely. He'll magnify himself in his heart, sow immense pride, and ultimately he even stands up against the Prince of Princes.
Against Christ.
Or God himself.
That's the usual understanding of Prince of Princes, a direct final confrontation.
But
he shall be broken without hand.
Without hand, so not by human means.
Exactly, implying divine intervention. His end comes supernaturally, not through human warfare or politics.
Okay, so Gabriel lays all this out. The vision is declared true. What's Daniel told to do with this information?
He's told to shut up the vision, for it shall be for many days. Seal it up, basically. It's for a future time.
In Daniel's personal reaction to all this, he just takes it in stride. Not at all. The text says he fainted and was sick certain days. It physically affected him.
Understandable, given the intensity.
Yeah. Afterward, he gets up and goes about his duties for the king, but he was astonished at the vision. And interestingly, it adds, but none understood it.
Even after Gabriel's explanation.
Apparently, the full depth or implication remained hidden, even to Daniel at that point. It highlights the sheer weight, the mystery of these prophecies.
What an incredible journey through that vision. From these empires rising and falling, the ram, the goat.
Yeah. Media Persia, then Greece, then its fragmentation.
To this emergence of a really disturbing figure, the little horn, operating through both power and deception.
Right. And the source, End Time Pilgrim, really emphasizes that progression. It's not just history. It's a pattern, maybe. The rise and fall, the emergence of this cunning power that attacks truth itself.
And the idea that this figure uses peace to destroy.
Mm.
That's quite something.
It really is. It makes you think about power beyond just military might, doesn't it? How manipulation and deceit can be just as destructive, maybe even more so, because they're harder to see.
So for you listening, what do we take away? This dive into Daniel, through the lens of this source, it's a reminder, isn't it, that even these ancient symbolic texts wrestle with huge themes.
Themes of power, conflict, the cycles of history. And this deep-seated belief, or hope, perhaps, that even the most formidable deceptive powers don't last forever. That ultimate end, broken without hand.
It pushes us to think about how we understand power today, maybe. Not just the obvious stuff, but the subtle ways truth can be undermined, or how peace can sometimes be a mask. And how societies, well, keep looking to these kinds of narratives to make sense of their own times, right?
Absolutely. Trying to map the present, anticipate the future, it's an enduring human quest.